A musical adventure. New artists, new musicians, and everyone involved in the world of music. Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee, this is J-Rod Concerts, the podcast, with your host, Jamie Rodriguez. Let's find out what we have this episode.
Hey, 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 good afternoon, young Padawans from a rainy, cloudy Nashville, Tennessee. Think winter is giving its last baby gasps, but it is a losing cause, dear winter. Spring has sprung. And thank you guys for joining. This is Jamie Rodriguez, your host. This is every episode of J-Rod Concerts, the podcast. Super excited with the next few weeks we have coming up. So make sure you're following us on our socials at J-Rod Concerts Media for everything. We start next week with the Midland Cruise. We're going to be out at sea with our friends of Midland. Other people joining us will be Orville Peck, Stephen Wilson Jr., Caitlin Butts, Flatland Cavalry, Silverado, who used to be called Mike and the Moonpies. And it's going to be a great, great time at sea. So make sure to join us there through our socials and, of course, the podcast. Thank you for your support. Now, today's guest, ladies and gentlemen, as we wrap up our South by Southwest coverage, is Sullivan. Formerly the Sully Band, a 10-piece beast of a band, playing originals and covers. They're fronted by San Diego native Robert Sully Sullivan and anchored by Grammy Award-winning Slayer of the Bass, James East, who obviously has played with titans like Eric Clapton, Elton John, and Michael Jackson. And Sullivan is composed of seasoned, accomplished players who hail from around the world. So we sat with Robert here, and really interesting perspective because he's also an entrepreneur. He's also a media personality. So he sees things also from the business angle, which you don't always see. So this was really fascinating stuff. So you guys will enjoy it, I believe. So make sure you check it out. The website is sullyband.com. So on with it on J-Rod Concerts, the podcast.
Yes, sir.
Such a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
For many reasons. Not only musically, but you are an entrepreneur. You're a business guy. You've been in the news. You've been in media. I mean, what a career you've had. And when I was researching you, I was thinking, you know, where does this passion come from? Where does this zest for life? And how do you do it? How do you, like, manage your energy?
Well, I think it's about managing time more than anything. In fact, I'm in the middle of a book that should come out at the end of this year, beginning next year, regarding time management. And the number one question I get is not about music, it's not about television and radio, it's not about stocks and finances, it's about how do you get so much stuff done. But I think to answer your question in a long-winded fashion is because I live my life in 15-minute increments. I don't take meetings, rarely. I defend my white space on my calendar vehemently, and I'm able to say no. And once you can do that, you can kind of manage your own expectations, whether you're working for somebody or you're the guy on top. So my main thing is I manage my time. I manage everybody else's expectations by giving them very clear boundaries from the very beginning on what I'm willing to do and not to do. So typically, that's it. I live my life in 15-minute increments, and that's the way I manage it.
Yeah, interesting. I love it. I mean, your musical project, by the way, you know, it started even though you played instruments from a young age, but the project started kind of recently, relatively recently, right? Like 2018.
No, I think this band started in 2011. But this, as far as my first record deal, was last year. Okay. And that's with, you know, Belly Up Records and Blue Elan Records, where we finally, after sort of fighting our way through the bar scene in San Diego, got asked to put together a tribute to 60s and 70s blues. Yeah. And it was under the former name, the Sully Band. It's an album called Let's Straighten It Out. We debuted number 3 on Billboard.
Oh, yeah.
Interestingly enough, above Joe Bonamassa, above Eric Clapton. But we didn't have the apparatus for distribution and you know, the marketing machine and what is called, you know, a kind of a real label experience. So in the meantime, you know, and my staff, specifically Mary Burt Godwin, James East, our musical director, we did every single best practices thing a band would do. To try to get popular and try to get noticed, and what I learned is, it was all really had nothing to do with where we are now. Sure. And I will, if I could tell every artist that's trying to make it, the only thing that matters, I mean the only thing that matters, is that you have to be able to fill up a room of 300 to 500 people on a hard ticket sale. Once you get that, then you'll get a manager. Once you get a manager, life will change for you. But without a national manager with some experience, no matter how much money you spend on Spotify, no matter how much money you spend on Instagram programs, no matter how much money you spend on recording and having a CD release party and videos, it's garbage. It's crap. It doesn't do a damn thing until you can fill up a room and with people that will pay to see you. And once you have that, and I will tell you, it's you know, there's a couple secrets to it. But once you have that and you can do it a number of times, then the world opens up to you. But it has nothing to do with getting on somebody's playlist. Because let's face it, you have a million plays on a playlist, it's worth about $3,000 on Spotify. Right. Okay. Right. When you get a manager, and what happened to us is we were able to get Rick DeVoe, who was the founding manager of Blink 182, mm-hmm. among other big bands. He's had a ton of experience. He decided to take a chance on us as literally a cover band.
Yeah.
And then from there, we got introduced to Black Box Media. Warner Brothers president, Livia Tortella, who runs that. Then we got introduced to Rome Ramirez from Sublime. We got introduced, and now we're here at South by Southwest.
Lots to unpack there, but really interesting stuff you said there. But first of all, Osoli, I'm curious, because you've always been great at music. Why did it take so long for you to take, like, officially that league?
Well, I had a record deal out of college. I started playing guitar when I was 8 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. It was a passion. I had a singer-songwriter deal with Island Records out of college, and it was a development deal. Most development deals don't go anywhere, neither did that. So I had to make a living at some point. So I would say along the way, making my way through the world as an entrepreneur and such, you know, I would always be the guitar guy at home, you know, around the fire pit in the backyard on Fridays. Somebody from a local church finally saw me and said, "You got to come up and sing with us." I said, "I'm never going to be in a church band."
Yeah.
And next thing you know, I was in charge of gospel worship at three different churches, how this band got together. And that's why it took so long, is because it wasn't even on the map after I was a young man.
Yeah. And you mentioned your debut album, how it charted so quickly and it got, you know, top of the Billboard charts, really. Were you surprised by it?
Sure, yeah. I think, you know, you don't know what you don't know when you get in this business. You think you know because you're watching what happens out in the world and such. But it was very surprising to me. And I think part of the reason that we did so well was because of a lot of international press we got, print media. But again, without the whole apparatus, without the star maker machine, without the publicity, without the distribution, and without the manager, it's just like anybody else putting an album out. And we even had a label behind us, but just long story short, we just didn't have the apparatus that we have right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I said, for my audience, you're an incredible entrepreneur, great business background.
Make
a business plan. You make a profit and loss statement. You make, what is the business plan here? Like, what's going on with music? And you kind of alluded to a little bit. There's so many variables happening. That's been the conversation this week. Like, what's happening with streams, with TikTok, with this, with that. How has that been from a business perspective to become an artist when it's so much?
Well, fortunately, you know, it's been an avocation versus a vocation. My entertainment group, I run a couple of companies. One's a consultant company for NASDAQ companies and public companies, but our main company, Sully Entertainment Group, you know, I own Loft 100 Studios is one piece of it. Sully Speaks, my keynote speaking business, is another piece of it. My media properties are another piece of it. And then Sully Band Music was another piece of it.
Yeah.
All of these factions, I mean, all the money goes in the top funnel, goes down. some of these factions of my entertainment group are profitable. Sully Entertainment Group or Sully Band Music was not. Okay, so that's I handle as a business plan that overall the company was extremely profitable. Just that segment wasn't profitable, but I was having the most fun at it, so we weren't going to do anything. We weren't going to ditch it. Now we're starting to be profitable. So it's like anything else, you know. Do you hold on to it or do you cut bait? You know, we've gotten rid of some media properties because they weren't profitable. We've gotten rid of other businesses because they weren't profitable. But this one, because I happen to be the guy on top and also happen to be the guy in front of the stage, it survived it all. And it's because it was a good avocation for it. And finally, as far as a business plan goes, to use your parlance, it's starting to make sense because now it's starting to make money.
And let me take it here. You guys have such an incredible life now, just in research. You guys are next level. I'm curious. I always love asking artists about this, but like, what was when you were growing up? Like, was there like an artist that you saw live?
Sure.
You're like Prince, this or that, or like someone that.
Well, I'm much older than Prince, so I think my first concert was 5 years old. My dad took me to Otis Redding because he couldn't find a babysitter. So Otis Redding was a big influence of mine, as were many blues artists like Stevie Wonder, and of course, guys like Buddy Guy. Stevie Wonder probably more R&B than blues, but long story short, those were the guys that really shaped me. And then, you know, towards the 60s and 70s, when I started listening to music like Jackson Brown, James Taylor, those type of things, if you mix in with the blues and R&B that I had, kind of formulated, you know, my taste in music. Keep in mind, I was also the guy that was reading the record labels to find out who was playing, you know, on those albums, you know, whether it was Russ Kunkel on drums, Lee Sklar on bass, Waddy Waterson on guitar, or even the Wrecking Crew back in the days, pardon me, when my parents were buying albums, like Sonny and Cher and Engelbert Humperdinck and Neil Diamond. Right. I was always the guy looking at who are the side people out there doing that stuff? Because many times the people that you hear on albums are not the same people that are in the band.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that whole Wrecking Crew did probably every single album from 1965 to 1972. Right. And then what's called Immediate Family took over. That's the Russ Kunkels of the day, Rosemary Butler, Arnold McCullers, those type of background singers and such were also on every album as well. So I was more of a fan of the process and the entire musical mixture than I was single artists. But those single artists that I mentioned probably influence what you're hearing today.
Well, Sully, you got a lot going on. So let me leave you with this. In business, in life, and also in your musical projects, it's important to surround yourself with people that are going to elevate you or drag you down. I've noticed that in your incredible albums and in your music, and we just met, you know, some of them off camera, you really do surround yourself with top of the line musicians.
No question. I mean, I say this out loud and I mean it. I'm the worst musician up there. I'm probably the best singer up there, and I'm a good arranger. But, you know, from Tripp Sprague, our saxophone player who's played with, you know, bands like Kenny Loggins and Jackson Brown, to Steve Diller, who's played with the Righteous Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Huey Lewis, to Jimmy Buffett, to Tomoka Jarvis, who's just fresh off tour with Andy Grammer, to April Leslie on baritone sax, who's from Michael Bolton's band. You've got Brian Jordan on guitar, who played with Dave Matthews and Lauryn Hill, and even James Brown. Of course, the James East, who's our musical director, from a very famous musical family. James has played with everybody from Elton John to Eric Clapton to Lionel Richie. Right. The list goes on and on with the people that we play with. And I think if you think in terms of those type of musicians, we've always attracted those type of musicians. In fact, this album, this album that's coming out and these singles that are coming out, in studio with us, we had James's brother as well, Nathan East, who's the most recorded bass player in the history of music. We had Steve Ferroni, who was Tom Petty's drummer for 25 years and started an Average White Band. We got Greg Fillinganes, who was Michael Jackson's music director under Thriller and was in the album Songs of the Key of Life. So we've along with our musicians as well. But I've always surrounded myself with guys that are going to make me sound good. And I think that's the key to it. Now, fortunately, they were available, and because of certain relationships, I was able to do that. But I can tell you, it is not lost on me that I'm the least talented person on the stage at any one time.
Well, Sully, I mean, thank you for everything you do. Thanks for your music, because what you guys do with your music is you change people's state. And when you change people's state, you change their emotions and you change their world. So thank you for that. Thank you for your music. And we're excited for your next step.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Our single comes out on April 19th. Yep. They haven't told me which one it is yet, but April 19th will... And then keep your fingers crossed. We'll get some attention from it.
You have been listening to J-Rod Concerts, the podcast. Thank you for tuning in.